Vidyabuddhi. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in the wrong verse. Buddha. By intelligence. Para abhidyayana. By accepting the body as the self. Visvrita atmakataki. Having forgotten the knowledge of Vishnu. Pashuhu. An animal. Strikamaha. Attached to sex life. Saha. He daksha. Astu. Let. Atitadham. Excessive. Dakshaha. Duksha. Vastamukaha. The face of a goat. Achirat. In a very short time. Translation, Daksha has accepted the body as all in all. Therefore, since he has forgotten the Vishnupada or Vishnugati and is attached to sex life only, within a short time, he will have the face of a goat. You can repeat. Daksha has accepted the body as all in all.
Daksha has accepted the body as all in all.
Therefore,
since he has forgotten the Vishnupada
or Vishnugati,
and is attached to sex life only.
Within a short time,
he will have the face of a goat.
So there's no purport to this text, and the next two texts actually have very short purports, so we'll keep reading. Vidyabhudhira vidyayam karma mayam asau jataha samsaranthvi haye chamu anusarvava maninam. Those who have become as dull as matter by cultivating materialistic education and intelligence are nescently involved in fruitive activities. Such men have purposely insulted Lord Shiva. May they continue in the cycle of repeated birth and death. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The three curses mentioned above are sufficient to make one as dull as stone, void of spiritual knowledge, and preoccupied with materialistic education, which is nescience. After uttering these curses, Nandishvara then cursed the Brahmanas to continue in the cycle of birth and death because of their supporting daksha and blaspheming Lord Shiva. We'll continue. Text 25. Gira shutaya pushpinda madhu kanthena purinda matta chon matti tatmana samu yantu haradvishaha. May those who are envious of Lord Shiva be attracted by the flowery language of the enchanting Vedic promises and who have thus become dull always remain attached to fruitive activities. And Srila Prabhupada explains, the Vedic promises of elevation to higher planets for a better standard of materialistic life are compared to flowery language because in a flower there is certainly an aroma, but that aroma does not last for a very long time. In a flower there is honey, but that honey is not eternal. And finally, text 26. Sarva vaksha dvija vrtyoi drita vidya tapo vrtaha. Vita dehendriya rama yachakka vicharant viha. These brahmanas take to education, austerity, and vows only for the purpose of maintaining the body. They shall be devoid of discrimination between what to eat and what not to eat. They will acquire money begging from door to door simply for the satisfaction of the body. So, purport. The third verse, the third curse, inflicted by Dandishvara on the Brahmanas who supported Daksha is completely functioning in the age of Kali. The so-called Brahmanas are no longer interested in understanding the nature of the Supreme Brahman, although a Brahmana means one who has attained knowledge about Brahman. In the Vedanta Sutra, also it is stated, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. This human form of life is meant for realization of the Supreme Brahman, the Absolute Truth, Or in other words, human life is meant for one's elevation to the post of a brahmana. Unfortunately, the modern brahmanas or so-called brahmanas who come in originally brahminical families have left their own occupational duties, but they do not allow others to occupy the posts of brahmanas. The qualifications for brahmanas are described in the scriptures, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and all other Vedic literatures. Brahmana is not a hereditary title or position. If someone from a non-Brahman family, for example, one born in a family of Shudras, tries to become a Brahmana by being properly qualified under the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, these so-called Brahmanas will object. Such Brahmanas, having been cursed by Nandishvara, are actually in a position where they have no discrimination between eatables and non-eatables, and simply live to maintain the perishable material body and its family. Such fallen conditioned souls are not worthy to be called brahmanas, but in Kali Yuga they claim to be brahmanas, and if a person actually tries to attain the brahminical qualifications, they try to hinder his progress. This is the situation in the present age. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu condemned this principle very strongly. During his conversation with Ramananda Roy, he said that regardless of whether a person is born in a Brahmin family or a Shudra family, regardless of whether he is a householder or a sannyasi, if he knows the science of Krishna, he must be a spiritual master. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had many so-called Shudra disciples like Haridas Thakur and Ramananda Roy. Even the Goswamis, who were the principal students of Lord Chaitanya, were also ostracized from Brahmin society, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his grace, made them first-class Vaishnavas. So Omagana Timirandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is very, very similar to what we were talking about yesterday in class, commenting on the previous verses and purports. And if we examine, to go further into this analysis, if we go examine Lord Chaitanya's most intimate associates, it says that Lord Chaitanya had 3.5 intimate associates, which is really interesting. 3.5 means, of course, that you had Ramananda Roy, who was a Shudra, considered to be a Shudra, obviously not a Shudra, he was a real Brahmin. And then you also had Sikhi Mahiti's sister, and Swarup Damodar Goswami. And so of them, the only person who was actually a Brahmana was Swarup Damodar, which is really interesting. And it's another thing about Swarup Damodar Goswami is that Swarup Damodar actually kept his Brahmachari name, which is really interesting. Generally, when people take sannyas, they take a sannyas name. Of course, according to this is a specific tradition, there's different names of sannyasi that's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And they don't keep their brahmachari name. And sometimes we see this in ISKCON. Prabhupada generally kept people's brahmachari name or household name when they took sannyas. And Prabhupada would just add the title Swami or Goswami, depending on whether they took sannyas from the household order of life or from the brahmachari order of life. Like if someone took a sannyas from the brahmachari order of life, they became Swami. And someone took it from the sannyas order of life, from the household order of life, they were called Goswami. So therefore, we got the title Goswami. Anyway, but Prabhupada generally didn't change, although it's actually interesting when Prabhupada left, some of his disciples who were giving initiation did change the names. But there's no problem with that. We're not criticizing that. Like you see devotees sometime with the name Bhakti something Maharaj, Bhakti Shramana, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, etc., like that. And actually, but Prabhupada generally kept the same name. Or Bhakti Marg Maharaj or Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, these are all like sannyas names. That wasn't their original name. Like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's name was Ghansham Prabhu. And actually, it's an interesting name that he had Ghansham, because that means like blackish, like a cloud. Which is, anyway, I mean, he came from a certain background, racial background, his body did, and Prabhupada called him Ghansham. So it's interesting. But actually, when I took sannyas, of course it was 1978, then I said to Rina Nanamaraj, who gave me sannyas, I said, Do not change my name, because this is the name Prabhupada gave me. He got a little angry at that point. He said, what are you talking about? I can do anything I want. And I said, yeah, but you're not going to change the name Prabhupada gave me. A little steam came out of the ears for a second, but then he accepted. So anyway, but traditionally, you know, people did change the names. Like Lord Chaitanya was originally Nimai. And when he took sannyasa, it wasn't Nimai Goswami. You never hear that name, do you? Nimai Goswami? No. You see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya was his name. It was a Bharti Sampradaya of sannyasis. Of course, you can also tell what Sampradaya of sannyasis you're in by your sannyas name. Therefore, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Jagannath Puri, and get the name right now. And then, anyway, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very concerned about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wanted to give him sannyas again because he was concerned that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in a lower order of sannyas, had not understood the Vedanta properly, and wasn't going to be able to maintain the sannyas because he was only 24 years old. You know, that's real young. And Lord Chaitanya was definitely handsome. He wasn't like modern-day sannyasis that, you know, have big noses, or, you know, the features are not exactly, as they say in Spanish, guapo, which means basically, you know, like, anyway, handsome, but actually to the highest degree. That's a Spanish word. So Lord Chaitanya was extremely, I mean, he had all Mahapurusha, all the signs of the Mahapurusha, the great personality. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very concerned about him, his status in sannyas, and therefore he thought, I'm giving him sannyas again, but also initiate him in a higher sampradaya than the Bharti sampradaya, and because he had the name Chaitanya, I guess he was going to give him another name like Saraswati or something like that. That's actually a higher name of sannyas. That's like, we have our name Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you understand? That's actually considered a very high name of sannyas, Bhakti Siddhanta. And that wasn't, of course, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's original name. So, anyway, so that generally that was that way. So getting back to this whole point of Lord Chaitanya's intimate associates, so you had Swarup Damodar Goswami, and Swarup was his brahmachari name. And he kept his brahmachari name out of humility because he wanted, because the point about it being a brahmachari is that you... Brahmachari is the legs of society, the Varnashram culture. You understand? The Brahmachari is supposed to serve. Whereas the sannyasi is the head, and sometimes the head gets a little inflated. You understand? Head gets inflated. The head begins to think everyone's supposed to serve me. So in order to protect, you know, out of humility, of course he's a pure devotee, you know, he's Lalita Devi, we understand that. In order to protect his spiritual status, he actually took a humble position, which is a good example for us. You know, we should be very, very careful about prophet adoration and distinction. Because as we know from Bhakti Vinod Thakur's writings, one of the causes of the anarthas is the byproducts of bhakti. In other words, you get a higher position when you become a successful preacher of Krishna consciousness. Just like, you know, you see you become guru or whatever, a sannyasi, and then everyone respects you. You get your own page on MySpace or so, or Facebook or something like that. Or, you know, everybody signs up for your Twitter accounts. Twitter? You know what that is? Anyway, it's just like I went on Twitter and I went on Facebook and everybody's signing up, you know, just to see these things, you know. So you get all these prophet adoration distinction on the internet. And as a result, because then they didn't have the internet, they just had people who offered dandavas. You know, especially when you're sannyasi, when you go to places, people bathe your feet and all these things like that. You know, it's just like, of course, if one's actually Krishna conscious, it gets boring after a while. You know, after the first time is a little interesting. You know, they're bathing my feet. I've never seen this done before. The second time, you know, it's all right. And the third time, just test the water before you do it, because sometimes they pour too hot water. I mean, I was in New Zealand last time, and they poured really hot water. And it was burning my feet. And sometimes they pour, like, they put the water in the refrigerator before they pour it on your feet. And it's really cold water, so it's just like, it's a test of your tolerance as they're pouring the water. So now I actually say, it's like a baby bathing a baby. You know, like when you bathe a baby, you put the water actually, or the milk, on your arm first to make sure it's skin temperature. So anyway, so it's actually a cause of anartas, this profit adoration thing. So therefore, Swarup Damodar Goswami maintained a very humble status. He never really took the sannyas name. Even though he was Goswami, he didn't actually dress as a sannyasi like that, which is interesting. And then, then the other associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then getting to the point of the verse, that was Ramananda Roy, who was definitely considered to be like Shudra, even though he was posted in a very high position. He was like the governor of Chennai, which is sometimes known as Madras. So he was the governor of Chennai, and, very high position, but still he was considered to be a Shudra because of the, Kayastha family or family that he appeared in. And when he first came in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the banks of the Godavari, Godavari is a sacred river. We actually visited this particular place in South India on our tour. When he first came in contact with him and they both fell on the ground, embraced each other, people could hardly believe that Lord Chaitanya was actually embracing or touching a Shudra. I mean, it's just like unbelievable that, a high-class sannyasi from a high-class Brahminical, because Lord Chaitanya was from a Brahminical family, he was actually touching this, Shudra, like an untouchable practically. Of course, Shudra is not an untouchable, but he's still, pretty low there on the totem pole. And so it's just like in India nowadays, if someone's a Shudra and they step on a Brahmin's shadow, the Brahmin becomes extremely upset. The Brahmin thinks this is a great offense. Actually, you're not supposed to step on the shadow of a Vaishnava. Of course, that's kind of hard, if you're going on a pilgrimage and the sun is out, I think it's almost impossible to avoid, isn't it? Like the sun's out and you're actually on parikrama somewhere and just looking at the ground and everyone's shadow and make sure you don't step on anyone's shadow. So I think that's a little too far out for us to follow. Getting back to the point, so Lord Chaitanya embraced Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy embraced Lord Chaitanya, and they were unconscious, and people could hardly believe it. And then from the other side, some of Ramananda Roy's associates could hardly believe that this intelligent guy was embracing a sannyasi, because he's a great scholar, and sannyasis, they're sometimes in India they're considered people who just couldn't make it. Like, it's like that in India sometimes when people join the temple, it's considered that, they just couldn't make it materially. So many times when I'm preaching to Indians, I actually have to explain that before I joined the movement, it's not that I'm actually bragging about who I was or what I had before I joined the movement. It's not, to me, it doesn't make any difference. But I just explain, in my family, I had a car, we had cars, and boats, and we had our own airplane. And actually Prabhupada, when he was talking about his devotees, giving his lectures in India, he would actually explain how different devotees came from very, very rich families. Ambarish, of course, and then this devotee, Dristadunya, his father was the head of some liquor company like that, big liquor company, Seagram's or something like that. Something to brag about. So anyways, so very, very wealthy families of devotees come. So Prabhupada would actually talk about that. And sometimes when we're preaching, we actually talk about that too. We say, I had everything. I had a sports car, an MG sports car. Actually, we talk about the type of sports car I had and boats and planes, anything I wanted, wealthy family. I gave it all up. So because people generally think, you take to Krishna consciousness because, you just couldn't hack it in the material world. Which is not the case with me. I could have easily hacked it. I didn't join Krishna consciousness to make money. People say, "Oh, you sannyasis, you're just collecting money, you're taking advantage of the movement." No, actually, when the people give sannyasis money, they give it for the purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness. Sannyasis distribute it, just like people give me donations, and because of that, you know, we have a new Singhasana for the deities and a Vyasasan for Prabhupada and so many other things here, you know, sense. So I use it in Krishna's service. So anyway, so people were shocked when Ramananda Roy, who's supposed to be an intelligent person, was embracing the sannyasa. So from both perspectives, it was shocking for people. So anyway, so Ramananda Roy, in spite of being in a Shudra family, was practically speaking the most intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu even took instruction from him. He actually showed this principle that Prabhupada mentions in the purport, you know, that Kiva Vipra Kiva Nyasu Shudra Kena Na Ye Krishna Tadva Veda Se Guru Hai. If one knows the science of Krishna, even if he's a Shudra, he's to be accepted as a guru. So Lord Chaitanya accepted Ramananda Roy as a guru. Of course, Lord Chaitanya was asking him what we call rhetorical questions. Rhetorical questions means a question you ask someone to teach something. You're actually acting as a student, but actually you're the professor, which is really interesting. Just like the teacher. A rhetorical question would be, let's say, if you're in school and the teacher says to the students, how much is one and one? You know, obviously the teacher knows. I mean, what is he standing up there for as a teacher unless he knows how much one and one is? So he asked the students how much. So he's asking to actually draw out the information from the students. But it appears like the students are teaching the teacher, but actually the teacher is teaching through this, what's called a maieutic method. That's a technical word. It comes from Greek, which means like a midwife who delivers something, rather than the midwife being the source of the baby. So Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy had this particular interchange that Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, you know, what is the highest goal of life? What is the method of reaching that goal? And Ramananda Roy, of course, first said, Varnashram. You know, one should actually follow very strictly the rules and regulations of Varnashram. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected that at that point. Then he said, "Go, you know, give me something practical, go higher." And then so Ramananda Roy said, well, I take it sannyasa, rejecting Varnashram. And then Lord Chaitanya rejected that also. He said, you know, that's not very good, you know, that's not very devotional. And then he said, give me something else. And then Ramananda Roy recited this verse in the Gita, Yat kurosi yat shnashi yaj dahoshi dadashi yat yat tapashashi kanti yat tat kurashwa madarpanam. Whatever you offer, whatever you give away should be done as an offering to me. And Lord Chaitanya said, hey, you got it, but you got to go higher than that. So anyway, so there was this whole discussion about the different stages. Finally, they came to the platform of the gopis, and finally, you know, going through all the rasas, and finally they came to the position of Radharani and her mood or worship of Krishna in Vipra Lamba Seva. So that was the whole discussion. So anyway, so Ramananda Roy became like the guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Ramananda Roy, you know, please retire. And Ramananda Roy actually went to King Pratibharuja, and Pratibharuja Maharaj allowed him to retire with actually full salary. Nowadays, people retire, but they're just so worried about money, they also work a job at the same time, even though they don't need it, even though they're getting Social Security, retirement, health benefits, and everything like that. You know, they're still worried about money. But actually, Ramananda Roy retired and spent the rest of his, I don't want to say life, but the rest of his pastimes in this particular point with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. And so then, all right, so Ramananda Roy, we already touched upon him, is considered a Shudra. Sikhi Mahiti was also considered like that. But then you have Sikhi Mahiti's sister. And so you have a lady, you know, talk about, because also, you know, these brahmanas who were so-called brahmanas, not only rejecting people who are not brahmanas or people of low class or people of shudras, but what to speak of, you know, women. You know, there's women not in the Vedic culture, but in the modern Indian culture, which has been heavily influenced by the Muslim culture, are considered to be like outcasts, practically speaking. or at least, you know, they belong in the kitchen rolling chapatis. And they should just, women should be seen and not heard, something like that. So he accepted her. I think her name was Madhavi, yeah. He accepted her as actually, you know, intimate associate too, which is really interesting. So Lord Chaitanya was setting this example in his pastimes that basically of equality. You understand? Actually real equality in the egalitarian, it's called egalitarianism. Lord Chaitanya was the original egalitarianist in religion and in actually in society. So this is very, very important too. Like Prabhupada actually said that if one takes up Krishna consciousness, you know, there was one discussion, Prabhupada was talking about the position of women, but Prabhupada said if a lady or a man or anyone takes up Krishna consciousness, they become more intelligent. Because sometimes devotees take things out of context in Prabhupada's statements, you know, where it appears that Prabhupada is saying, you know, that women are less intelligent. So what happens is that they take it out of context to exploit other people. I mean, it's really, really interesting how people use the philosophy presented by Srila Prabhupada to try to usurp Prabhupada's position. Now, I'm going to explain what that means. What I mean, usurp Prabhupada's position? Am I speaking about the Ritvik versus the Guru philosophy? Well, it's interesting. The Ritviks are right in a certain respect. I'm not saying they're right saying that, you know, that Prabhupada will initiate for the next 10,000 years. That's pretty wild. It's completely wild because, you know, initiation requires the physical presence of someone. But they're right in the respect that that people should not usurp Prabhupada's position. So what is Prabhupada's position? Not simply like in name the founder Acharya of ISKCON, in name the guru or anything like that, but Prabhupada's position is that he was able to apply the Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance. And Prabhupada was able to be, authoritative in his presentation. Okay, there's the word I was looking for, authoritative. You know, so Prabhupada was very authoritative. You listen to Prabhupada's classes, very, very authoritative. So what happens is that when I'm talking about usurping Prabhupada's position, that we want to be authoritative too, utilizing quotes from Prabhupada. In other words, we're actually taking Prabhupada's position without saying that we're taking it, even the Ritviks. Isn't it really interesting? Because they use quotes without Prabhupada's purity. They're using quotes to actually engage in passionate fighting activities. You know, that's kind of ridiculous. And saying that they're the interpreters of Prabhupada's message. Especially, you know, nowadays, of course, it's quite dangerous because people have the Veda base or the info base, whatever you call it. And I'm actually the interpreter. And you find so many interpreters from all sides, both sides of the spectrum. You know, you find the liberal interpreters and the conservative interpreters. And the conservatives fight the liberals and whatever. But they're all positing themselves as if they were absolute like Prabhupada. You understand? Which is really interesting. In other words, everyone's trying to be guru. Not everyone, I'm sorry. That would be ridiculous. But many people are trying to be guru without either realizing it or without telling others or, you know, being introspective enough to understand what they're doing. And they're becoming imitation Prabhupadas. What do I mean by imitation Prabhupada? Not sitting on the Vyasasana. I'm not talking about sitting on the Vyasasana or giving initiation that has nothing to do with it. But they're imitating Prabhupada in terms of his authoritative stance. You know, it's not like Prabhupada was just, you know, very authoritative. Which is all right, because Prabhupada is directly connected with Krishna. But when we do it, if we're not, like, directly connected with Krishna, seeing Krishna, talking with Krishna, you know, realize your rasa with Krishna. You know, there's very few of us, I'm not going to say no one, but very few of us have actually realized that. When we do it, it's actually usurping Prabhupada's position. Anyway, so that's a big problem in the movement. And what that does is it discourages a lot of people too, because, you know, from Prabhupada we could take that, because, you know, we knew his position. You know, Prabhupada was just saying, you know, this is how it is, you're a rascal, okay, Jai Prabhupada. But, you know, when we do it in the name of being older devotees or, you know, whatever, then what that has the effect of discouraging people, disempowering people, and impeding the progress of the Krishna consciousness movement. You understand? So to actually accept Prabhupada means to accept Prabhupada's authority, and don't posit yourself as the interpreter of Prabhupada's authority, which is really interesting. Anyway, so this is one of the points I wanted to make, one of the axes I had to grind, to use a vegetarian example. Non-vegetarian example is bones you have to pick, but anyway. You heard about that before? Bones, axes you have to grind. So what we need, getting back to the point of the verse, is what we need is actually brahmanas in the Krishna consciousness movement. Brahmanas by the qualities mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Sama, Dhamma, etc. And the way you achieve those qualities, there's only one way to achieve those qualities, is to actually be absorbed in Krishna's names. Not artificially, not using some other technique, but to actually just like take shelter in Krishna's names. And Krishna gives you the intelligence how to control your senses. It's not that Krishna controls your senses for you. That's another misunderstanding that people have. You know, sama. Let's take the word sama, for example. Sama means being equal poised, like samadarshi. That means in happiness and distress and everything like that. So you think that by chanting Hare Krishna very, very nicely, then you're going to become like, it's going to be like Novocaine in your brain. Or something like that. So just like whatever someone says to you, you just say Hare Krishna, like that. It's not exactly like that. It's that Krishna gives you an intelligence how to tolerate, as the Rupa Goswami states in the Upadesha Amrita, isn't it? Bhaja Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam. The pushing's there, but you tolerate, and you tolerate for a higher purpose. You tolerate out of compassion. Anyway, so when you chant nicely, you get the intelligence and the ability, as Krishna says, I'm the intelligent, the ability of man, the strength of the strong. All these statements are there in the Gita. So you get all these abilities in order to tolerate, but it's you who have to do it. It's not that you just sit down, Hare Krishna, everything's going well, Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, but you chant nicely like that, but then you got to endeavor too. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And if you do that, then you can actually exhibit and imbibe the brahminical qualities and become a real brahmana. And a Vaishnava is naturally has these qualities. So any questions or comments about any of these points? We made a lot of points in class. Questions, comments, arguments? Yeah. Wow, 12 people. Usurp, yeah. Quite common.
But how can actually, but on the other side, Srila Prabhupada wanted all of his followers to become gurus. So how is then the right way that his followers?
Well, presenting Yari Dekatarega Krishna Bhadesh, Samaraga Guru Hoy Tore Desh, to share with people Krishna consciousness. But as far as the, let's say, the application, as far as bossing people around, you know, we share the philosophy, that's authoritative. Obviously, you know, you're not the body. That's what Krishna says. But as far as, I don't think we should be taking like an authoritative stance, you know, you rascal, you're not the body. We're probably to do that. Or bossing people around, we should be more facilitating people in understanding Krishna consciousness. It's a little bit different. Like Prabhupada's stance as the Acharya was, I mean, he was facilitating, obviously, but it was more like very authoritative stance. You know, you see when Prabhupada was dealing. Like even with his disciple, I was just listening to something, he was talking with Tibal Krishnamars, and they went, what were they talking about? Something, anyway, but Prabhupada kept interrupting Tibal Krishnamars. And Tibal Krishnamars was talking to him. Prabhupada said, it's like this, like this, like this, like this. All right, that's fine. But I think our stance with people, with other devotees, with non-devotees, with whoever, has to be more like a facilitating stance rather than a bossy stance. Of course, I'm not saying Prabhupada was bossy, but he was authoritative. We are presenting, this is not coming from me, this is coming from Prabhupada. That's how we present it. And what do you think about this? You know, back and forth. So that sort of stance has more effectivity, it's more efficacious as far as bringing people to Krishna consciousness and encouraging people and having people remain in the movement rather than, you know, the authoritative stance, because we're not Prabhupada. And then also, we can allow people to have different, like Prabhupada also allowed people to engage in different ways according to their psychophysical nature, you know, and do different things to bring people to Krishna consciousness. Whereas, you know, instead of imposing our particular interpretation of Prabhupada's words on others, you know, because Prabhupada did say different things at different times. One time he said to a sannyasi, sannyasi's business is to always travel, never stay in one place. Another sannyasi said, you must stay in one place. So there's many instructions. And originally, Prabhupada didn't even want his letter book, his letters distributed widely, because Prabhupada said those instructions would be misunderstood because they were time, place, and manner instructions. So we have to be really careful about that. You know, Prabhupada did. I mean, certain times he said to one person, you know, what is the use of doing films? They're useless, you know. Another person, he said, you should do films. You know, to Yadavar, he said, you should do films. And other people who said no. To me, he said, what's the use of, you know, I wanted to go back to the university. And Prabhupada said, what's the use of that education? What will you do with that education? And to other people, like Srila Damodar Goswami, Prabhupada said, keep going. You know, and I had the opportunity to get a PhD and work with the Bhaktivedanta Institute. My mother was going to pay for it, thank God bless her. And this is all presented to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, no, what's the use? Huh? So you know, you can take different, there's a different quote for different folks, you know, different shloks for different folks. So you can do that with Prabhupada, but basically, we should be more, you know, liberal in dealing with each other, rather than taking that authoritative stance and actually imitating Prabhupada. And that's really what's discouraging a lot of people in our Krishna conscious movement, and also agitating a lot of people.